to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 31.75. NASDAQ futures down 95. Dollar futures down 260 after being down 300. Frank, are you with us?
I certainly am.
Well, that's good. How are you?
Good. Good. You sound better this morning.
So far, yeah. You know, it's early yet, they say.
I called in and there wasn't an answer. I'm thinking, oh, God, he's on a ventilator.
Okay. No.
Well, that's good news.
Yes, it is good news. What, they still put people in ventilators or not? I guess they do.
Yeah, they still do. They found it's not as efficient as they thought it would be, but they're getting better on treating the disease, much better.
They are, and I still am on record as saying that the disease is not as virulent as it was. The numbers drive me in that direction, Frank, and I know, of course, you're going to argue with me right out of the gate, but...
I don't think it is as virulent as it was before, but who says it's not going to mutate in the other direction?
Who says California won't be in the ocean today? Just saying.
Well,
who said the Bears would be 5-1?
Will they be 6-1?
I don't think they will, but I hope so.
Did you guys? We might as well. Well, we'll talk about the market being in a crapper here in a minute. But interesting sports stories this weekend. I thought I'd heard it all, seen it all, in some of the sports stuff, but. I admit to being flummoxed by this one. Did you see how this guy at Penn State is being vilified for the IU game? We listened to the Irish at all?
Yeah.
The Irish game. Well, it turns out, the game was so far gone that the guys there, all they were doing was talking about the ending of the Indiana-Penn State game, and which evidently turned out to be amazingly interesting, where Indiana won in overtime.
Right.
And
I saw the last maybe 7 minutes of the game and the overtime.
Did the guy get in?
Yes.
By what? Like half an inch
the
or what?
The tip of the ball. What do you think, Matty?
I didn't watch the game. I did see that highlight though, and it was damn close. But yeah, I thought the tip of the ball went across.
There definitely wasn't enough to overturn the call.
My Notre Dame gang, of which this was a new record or a new low. Everybody tweets back and forth on the Irish game like every play. It's like something out of Bizarro World. I think it was up to 150 tweets or something.
Texts, you mean?
Texts, yeah, not tweets. And they of course idea went to the and all they were doing was talking about another Hoosier call, Hoosier call. How can it be? Hoosier calls. They haven't won a game in 30 years. How many Hoosier calls could there be?
They would never
they
get
got stopped
break.
On fourth down in the red zone, what, twice, Matty?
Yeah. Indiana football has never gotten a break in the history of Indiana football.
Yeah. I don't know what they were talking about. Anywho, now they're saying that the Penn State coach, even though he's turned the program around and he's done this and that and he's a good guy, he is a game coach now. He's horrible. Because they evidently there was a play with 1:40 to go, where the Indiana guy, or the Penn State guy, the Penn State's, they're tied, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's 1:40 to go. So they give the ball to the Penn State guy, and he runs toward the end zone, and evidently Indiana let him score. Is that what happened?
Yes.
And at how Penn State was so poorly coached. That the kid was too dumb, he didn't fall down. I don't know that I've
he
ever...
He realized as soon as he stepped into the end zone, he made a mistake.
I don't know that
you
I've ever...
You can see in the replay. Oh, yeah. He goes, oh, shit. Yeah. I mean, all dying. But that's what he did. You could see the reaction there.
But, I don't ever recall. I mean, that's what I'm saying. This is this one. I'm behind the times on. I don't ever recall somebody coaching somebody to not score.
Well, if he had fallen down, it was all about clock management. And so they could have run out the game, but no.
But, I mean, I would have.
And then yesterday, the Atlanta Falcons were in the same exact position, and Gurley was going in to score, and he did fall down and tried to stop himself from scoring. And apparently, if I understand it correctly, because, again, I wasn't watching the game. I saw the highlight. The ball crossed the plane, and so they ruled it a touchdown when he was trying to go down at the one to basically run out the clock. Sure enough, Detroit has enough time, goes down, scores, and wins the game. And so the Falcons lose again.
Well, I just...
But that's less amazing than the Lions winning again.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I was talking about. Yeah, that was the game. The Falcons went down, scored when they were trying not to score, and then left the Lions enough time. And you're right, yeah, it was amazing the Lions went down the field, but they did. They were given the opportunity.
Well, I admit to being a total Luddite on this, because if it were me, I would either just say, take a knee or run it. But once you're running it, I don't know. I never would tell anybody to stop. Make 19 yards, not 20.
Well, some coaches believe that you should always score if you have an opportunity to score.
And I was kind of in that group, too.
And I get that. And that's not necessarily wrong to think that if you trust in your defense. But in today's football, when the offenses are so good and so much better than the defenses in most cases, not all cases, then you don't want to leave like Russell Wilson or somebody great like that any clock, any time, by scoring. If you can get down at the one and go down, you do that.
And well, take three knees.
See, the point is, Chief, you don't take a knee there because if it's third down or four, basically, if a first down wins the game based on the clock,
yeah,
you know what you need to do.
Right.
The issue is they let you get the first down, and if you don't go down and you score, then you just gave them all that time left.
Well, in college, you're down when you go down. But how stupid would it look in pros if the guy went down and nobody touched him ever for like a week?
Well, if you give yourself up, they rule you down.
Okay, but I've never seen a pro running back do that.
Sure, yeah, they do it
all. Running back?
Absolutely, that's what Gurley was trying to do yesterday.
What would have been the first time?
You see guys go down to keep from going out of bounds to stop the clock.
Yeah.
It's
just clock management. I mean, typically, like I said, if you have an opportunity to score a touchdown, you're going to. But against certain teams in certain situations, you're better off if you get that first down to just go down at the 1 yard line instead of going.
All my years of hearing about Indiana football conceding those idiots 8 points with a minute to go is a lot.
I agree. I would never think of that for Indiana football. That's more of a professional thing.
Yeah. But I guess the quarterback's good, huh?
And they don't have Ken Eisenbarger anymore.
But who's their new QB? my guys are saying how good he is. Where'd he come from?
They've had a couple good quarterbacks. This guy's a decent coach. And people like him. The last coach before was fairly good, but everybody hated him.
Well, you know, they seem to have a...
I am a Hoosier, I have to keep up on this stuff.
It's obvious that you're a Hoosier. Just saying.
Dumb and proud of it.
Yeah, I'm just saying. But I think you're more like one of the southern ones, too. And again, South Bend is south of I-80.
I had an Indiana congressman tell me that St. Joe County was part of Michigan or... Chicago. He didn't know which, but it wasn't part of Indiana. South Bend to the Illinois border. There were too many unions, Catholics, and a few other ethnic groups up there for it to be truly considered part of Indiana.
Well, my Catholic buddies from Indianapolis used to refer to their neighbors as Jakes. Not sure what that meant, but he's just a Jake. Okay. I guess that described everything. I don't know what that was, but anyway,
Mike Warren didn't make All-State in Indiana in basketball, first, second, or third team.
Indiana has a huge, what do you want to call it? What's the word they used to use when somebody had a lot of guys from a certain high school went to a certain college? Not a core. What the hell was the name?
Padre.
No. well, I'll use the term connection, but a lot of people from Marist are going to IU. Some of the girls of Marist is a really good volleyball team, girls volleyball team, and
yep,
girls basketball. A lot of them are going to Indiana.
It's a good school.
Oh, yeah.
What happens if you're from Illinois and you get into Indiana or Purdue, they generally will give you in-state tuition as financial, you know, part of your financial aid package. Otherwise, it'd be all people from southern Indiana.
Well, that was, who knows if it's still this way, but my brother was kind of ticked. My niece, of course, this is a while ago, decides to go to Wisconsin instead of Illinois. So he had to pay like a real lot more, so he wasn't all that happy about that. But her third year, she went to an abroad program in Italy. Really nice. I mean, and he went over there for a few weeks, and they traveled around, and they went to where my grandparents came from. So it was a great experience. But, of course, he finds out that that particular program is an Indiana program. And essentially, she was in the University of Indiana for that year. Well, Indiana's rate for tuition is significantly less than Wisconsin's. So, of course, my brother says, hey, since she's essentially going to Indiana for her third year, why am I paying you bleeps the Wisconsin rate? Ah, if you want her to leave, you can leave, but no, we're not cutting you a break. It's a great world we live in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, your favorite person, Lori, yesterday, not only was I out in the Audrey and I, of course, went to a place that was shut down just to try and help them out Saturday night. And they were interviewing some people on Friday as they shut down restaurants and bars in Will County. And what's Naperville? Was it
which Lori has nothing to do with, by the way.
Naperville's DuPage.
Right, DuPage.
Which Lori also has nothing to do with.
Right.
But the south end of Naperville might be Will.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's Napertucky as far as I'm concerned. It's like
Mike Rayco called it the land beyond O'Hare.
Well, that's right. It's like, you know, it's like if you're in Manhattan, anywhere outside, what's the difference? It's the heathens. But anyway, they interview this lady in a restaurant, and she goes, "This is so ignorant. We can't have anybody in here." You look across the street at the Walmart and the Target. The place is mopped. You tell me you can only get COVID here and not there. She goes, "Who's running this place?" God, it sounds like she listened to the show.
It wasn't my friend Lori, though. It was your friend Jay.
Yeah, well, actually, Lori's thing is now she's decided, evidently they have all these speed cameras around the city. I don't know where they are, but they're someplace. And
where you are.
She's now decided, but at least she's finally having an honest bone in her body for the first time. She's going to start giving tickets if you're 6 to 9 miles an hour over, just for the revenue. At least in the announcement, there wasn't a shred about, we've discovered so many accidents where people are 6 to 9 miles over the hour. Not even a mention of that. It was totally, we need the revenue. People are not driving as much, so our revenue on speed cameras, tickets, and red light cameras has dropped, so we have to start it. Enforcing the rules differently to get our budget in. Maybe they should figure out what the budget is for looters and for people shooting people on the expressways and do something there.
That's the responsibility of the state police.
And
we've had more Republican state governors than Democrats over the past 25 years.
You know what, Frank, I'm very well aware.
You're cut by a Republican.
I'm very well aware of that, of the deal. I'm not so sure that if the Chicago police wanted to, they couldn't go out on the expressway.
Well, they go out there, but I'll tell you, I've been going 75 and passed by a cop.
Oh, yeah.
Going to lunch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No lights on.
Well, for those who don't know what we're talking about, in one of the oddest deals ever for the city of Chicago, which is, you know, which says a lot because there's so many odd deals, the city made a cut. Excuse me, cut a deal with the state years ago that they would not, at the time they didn't have claimed they didn't have enough policemen. So they traded off expressway enforcement, which doesn't mean, you know, that if there's a big accident, the Chicago police aren't there. I think they, anyway, whatever. In return for the state being able to put lottery tickets at O'Hare and Midway, the city kicked them, enforced them to the expressways, even though they're within the city limits. Now, if anybody thinks that that isn't one of the most ridiculous uses of government, they're right down my alley, but just saying, Frank. When you see lack of enforcement, Frank is correct. It's supposed to be the state police. But I'm not sure that if you're Willow Springs, that the piece of the expressway that runs through Willow Springs, you couldn't put a cop out there if you wanted to. I mean, I don't know if you're prevented from doing it, Frank.
I looked in DuPage for a long time, and I have never seen the DuPage County Sheriff on I-88 or the 290 extension.
No, I haven't either. I'm just.
Yeah, so trust me, there's enough corrupt little towns that run along the expressways that you would expect that maybe we'd get pulled over by a Stickney policeman or a Lyons policeman. They're all along I-55, so.
I've not seen it either. I'm just wondering. It's not a statute. I mean, it was a deal made. I don't know that it's a statute.
Well, they pass laws that we don't know about all the time, unless you read the record.
So, if a Chicago policeman is on the expressway doing 80, and you blow by him at 100, he can't stop you? I think he can, I think he probably could.
Oh, he won't. He'll look at me and say, "That's an Irish last name."
Well, I'm not saying, but I don't think that if he pulled you over and gave you a ticket, that you could go into court and say he did not have the right to give me a ticket. I don't think he can.
I really don't know. I wouldn't think so. But if he can't give me a ticket, there's a problem.
I would say, yeah.
I mean, when there's a shooting on the Dan Ryan or something, you see all the police cars out there. You see Chicago police evidence technicians and cop cars shutting down the expressway. Of course.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How do you shut it down with one state police car and 2 minute men?
Yeah, you don't. All right, we got to talk about the market. What are you making here? What do you think of all this?
Boy, yeah. It's, 100 points off its highs. You know, people are panicking. I'm just going to watch. I'm going to do my old Chauncey Gardner, and I'll just watch here. I mean, what's going to happen on the election? If Trump wins, are we going up or down? If Biden wins, are we going up or down?
I think a lot of it has to do with what goes on in the Senate.
Well, they're going to pass Amy Coney Barrett today.
Yeah. Which is interesting. But she's going to get in.
And then hopefully the election is strong enough in one direction or another that we don't have to have the Supreme Court decide again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not going to...
That's part of the plan. That's the insurance policy. That's why they're doing it.
Well, but they decided last time on a specific issue. I don't think they're going to have a...
Yeah, well, it broke down along party lines. Come on.
I get that.
It would break down along party lines this time. What do you think, Matty? Bail me out.
No, I assume you're right on that.
Okay, but my point is, if you guys let me get there, is that last time it was specific state issue, one state, one issue. It was the hanging Chad crap in Florida. So I don't know that when you have 50 different states with, different election rules regarding mail-in votes and all those kinds of things, I don't know that you could take a general, we think all 50 states were screwed up, therefore we deserve to be in. I don't know that that's a case anybody would hear. Now, how would that case...
Yeah, you can go after a state or two.
Okay.
You know, a big state like Pennsylvania.
All right. Well, I mean,
that's a lot of electoral votes.
Well, okay. I'm asking. I don't know the answer. I'm asking you. Say,
I don't know.
In other words, if Trump loses by a little bit in Wisconsin, all right, and then the vote, the mail-in votes is all screwed up in Pennsylvania, but he loses by 10 points. You can't go to Wisconsin and say it's a mail-in vote issue when the mail-in vote issue was in Pennsylvania. What I'm saying is,
yeah, but you go after mail-in votes in Pennsylvania if it's disenfranchising Republican voters, which has never happened in my lifetime. But if it's that, then in Wisconsin, then they can go to the Supreme Court on that separate issue.
All right, what I'm trying to get to is the Supreme Court had a narrow enough issue in Florida that they could vote on that ended up throwing the election to Bush. Okay, but they didn't bring the entire election in to the Supreme Court and say who won.
No. But yes, they did. It's not the entire election. You do it bit by bit, issue by issue, and it's.
But how many times you? I'm saying, right now, I don't know what the issue would be in front of the Supreme Court if the states don't match up. Is what I'm saying.
Well, just wait.
Well, I'm all ears, obviously, and all eyes.
Trump campaign lawyers are going after Nevada right now. They're going after Michigan. They're going after Pennsylvania. The laundry list of complaints they have about the election is stunning.
I don't deny that. I don't know the Supreme
Court's
going to.
It's a starting point, and they'll re-adjudicate it or whatever.
I think if he loses by a little bit, there's a problem that's going to end up at the Supreme Court. If it's one or two states, if it happens to be a state with the most, I'll say liberal, I won't say egregious, mail-in vote stuff, where all of a sudden some state normally has 3 million voters, and all of a sudden they got like five because of the mail-in stuff, and they haven't done a very good job at policing it, whatever. If this happens and Trump loses by, you know, four votes there, then I think that state ends up in the Supreme Court. I'm with you 100%. But if he gets murdered in a state that doesn't have, you know, if the close one is a state that doesn't even have mail-in votes, I don't know how he bitches about that one.
Everybody has mail-in votes. There's a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, there's something, you know.
I mean, trust me, if it's close, both sides will go for it. And if both sides go for it, hey, it's a rigged game in the Supreme Court right now.
To a point.
Then why are we voting if it's not going to be a rigged game? Why are they approving Amy Coney Barrett?
Well,
to rig the game.
Well,
all
I'm saying is you can't just take, I lost by 10 points, I'm going to the Supreme Court, and they're going to overturn the election. That's not going to happen.
They could overturn the state, though.
A state. For a specific reason.
A state. Or a county. They could. You have way too much faith in the judicial system.
No, I don't. I'm saying what I've heard many times, and you just did it, was that they decided, quote, an election. They decided
549 votes decided an election in Florida. Yes.
They decided what was going to go down in Florida, which just happened to be an election close enough to decide the election.
And as a result, it ended up deciding the election.
Right.
That ruling.
I don't disagree.
Whichever way it went, was going to decide the election.
Correct.
Right. Then I was correct.
But what I'm saying is,
you're both correct. It's a semantical argument.
Well, I said there has to be a specific issue. Right now, I don't exactly know what it is. They're, like you say, they're throwing off spaghetti sticking on all four walls that there'll be one someplace.
Right, and the Democrats are throwing up suppression of voters or calling a voter registration list. You know, everybody has something. You know, both sides are preparing for this.
Well, we can't ever just have like a something on a weekend where we vote on Saturday and Sunday where most people are off. We can't ever.
Or take a day off in the middle of the week.
Yeah,
hey, we can't.
No, you want
to
only
give people the day off to vote.
Yeah, you can if you're if they're civic employees and they're going to vote for you.
Yeah, state of Illinois, all the public employees are now off. It's a holiday.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Name the red state where they do that.
So, Frank, the Irish are ranked number four, but it looks to me college football is the big three and the rest of the people. Just saying.
Well, we'll know in 2 weeks. Notre Dame plays Clemson in 2 weeks. Notre Dame's defense has allowed 5 touchdowns in 5 games.
Yeah.
Admittedly against not the strongest of teams.
Pitt had some people. But, I mean, yeah,
they had 11 guys on offense and 11 on defense.
The average are deeper than they have been. They're still not in the other class. They're not in the other class, but we'll find out. SP Futures down 30, and NASDAQ Futures down 81. Thank you, Frank. Be back with Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The control freaks guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, just went over on the board. Also, we have Mr. Jan Flanagan. SP Futures down 30, actually 30 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures down 81 and a quarter. Dow Futures down 261. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 22. Let's call that flat. Shanghai down 26.8%. Hang Seng up 132.5%. It's been a long run lately where the Shanghai and the Hang Seng go like in different directions every day. It's sort of weird. DAX down 276. It's over 2%. 2.2%. FTSE's only down 4, which is odd. It's less than a 0.1%. The CAC around down 23.4%. Evidently, the coronavirus thing is more in Germany or something. But anyway, as a review, Friday, the Dow was down 28. However, the S&P was up 11, and the NASDAQ was up 42. So mostly to the upside on Friday. We've got bonds at 0.81% for the 10-year. We've got the Bund minus 0.56. We've got the Japan positive 0.03. Japan has not moved in quite a while. Oil down 86 cents, 38.99. Well, pretty much under the 40, 41 where it was last week. Brent down 85 cents, 40.92. Natural gas, $3 even. are by about $1.12. So if you get gas cheaper, I heard rumors of it someplace in the south side, 204 out in, where was it, Lockport or someplace, maybe. 204. That's cheap enough.
That's not bad.
Gold up a whole 60 cents. 1905 silver down 29 cents. 2438 copper down a penny. It's 311. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of crashes already this morning on the outbound Ryan local lanes just before Garfield Boulevard. There is a crash, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown on the outbound side. Downtown 95th is up to 18 minutes and growing due to that crash. Nothing significant, but enough of a slowdown to note, so keep that in mind. Inbound side looks okay. Nothing on I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson has been quiet all morning. We do have a crash on the inbound Eisenhower, though, just before St. Charles Road out in the western suburbs. Route 390 to the old post office is 30 minutes, from Wolf Road, 18 minutes. So a bit of a slowdown there from that crash. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways out in the suburbs, western suburbs, Foster at North Wooddale Road, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be cold. A chance of some drizzle this morning, and then it should be dry the rest of the day, but cold. A high of just 41. Right now it's overcast and 36, going up to a cloudy high of 41. For our Phoenix listeners, it's cold out there, Chief. You talked about Denver being frigid yesterday. Well, it's cold in Phoenix, too. Partly cloudy skies with a high of just 68 today, and wind gusts up to 40 miles per hour down in the Phoenix area.
That brings a little sand to the air.
Yeah, right now it's clear and 67, and that's where it's going to stay for a high before it warms back up later in the week. In sports, the Bears, Monday Night Football tonight, a big game in Los Angeles as they'll take on the 4-2 Rams. Bears, of course, are 5-1 on Monday Night Football. Bears look to stay a half game ahead of Green Bay, who won yesterday, so the Packers are now 5-1. But the Packers have already had their bye. The Bears have not, so if the Bears can win, they'll remain in first place by themselves in the NFC North. It's a 7 p.m. Central Time kickoff tonight on ESPN, Monday Night Football, Bears versus Rams. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Arizona Cardinals handing Russell Wilson and the Seahawks their first loss, 37-34 in overtime. Cardinals are now 5-2, one of the surprise teams in the NFL, and the Seahawks dropped to 5-1. So the NFC West is a great race with all the four teams being good, including the Rams, who the Bears play tonight. Lastly, World Series Game 5, a pivotal game last night, and it went to the Dodgers. They topped the Rays 4-2. And they now lead the best of seven series 3-2. They'll look to close it out tomorrow night, game 6 down in Texas. Of course, they're off tonight. Chief.
Do you believe that finish of the game the other night?
That was crazy.
Yeah. First, the guys made a... Did they get two errors on that play or just one?
What would the first error be?
Center fielder.
Did he misplay the ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. I just saw the highlight of of the guy falling, rounding third, and then looks like he's out by a mile, and the ball gets away from the catcher, and he gets up and slides in.
Well, the first thing he did was make
a great call by Joe Buck too.
He made the big swoop. John, how are you? He made the big.
I'm fine. How about you?
All right. He made the big charged in and made the big swoop play to try and throw the first guy out, and he kicked the ball about 8 feet to his left, but then he retrieved it. Then he hit the cutoff man.
Figured, so then there probably was two errors.
Yeah, then he hit the cutoff man. Well, I don't think he could have assumed that the first guy was not going to score. But then he hit the cutoff man, and the cutoff man turned around, and when the guy fell down, he threw the ball in the dirt to the catcher.
Yep.
So he went in. Well, one guy got one extra base. So I don't know if you can have two errors on that, but I don't know. It's been interesting to see how that was.
Every base has to be accounted for. If he wouldn't have gotten the base, it's an error.
Well, he wouldn't have gotten home, but I don't think I think he would have gotten a third.
Yes, but he got. But I mean, would he have gotten home if he didn't fall down and the ball didn't get away from the catcher? I wonder if he would have gotten home.
Oh yeah,
I think he would have. Right. So yeah. I think that would constitute the first error.
But he wouldn't
then
even.
Then he fell down, and he should have been out, and then the ball gets away from the catcher, and that's the second
error. But he probably wouldn't even have gone to. Well, he might have gone to third if there was a play at the plate on the first guy, but I don't know if you can. I don't think you can call him getting to third as an error.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look it up and see if there was two errors on that.
Yeah, because it was a weird kind of. It was two oopsies, let's put it that way. But, couldn't happen to a nicer team. Maybe they'll lose tonight. And maybe
tomorrow.
Maybe they'll lose tomorrow. And so are the Bears, when's the last time that they didn't totally embarrass themselves on national TV?
Thursday Night Football, 10 days ago, or was it 2 weeks ago, when they beat Tampa Bay and Tom Brady on Thursday Night Football.
I don't. Well, I guess I should. I consider national Monday or Sunday, but still, you're right. Thursday is national today.
Yeah, and that was a big one. And Tampa Bay is really good, as they've proven the last couple of weeks, blowing out Green Bay and then blowing out the Raiders yesterday, and the Bears beat them on Thursday Night Football. Now, I happened to go to the game last year on Sunday Night Football in L.A. when they played the Rams, and that was abysmal. That was the most boring sporting event I've ever been to in person in my life. And I'm thinking, I'm in Los Angeles watching this. I should be doing something else. But you know, they have had a lot of clunkers on Sunday and Monday nights, certainly. But yeah.
See, now, before you were married, can't do this anymore. Plus, your wife is every bit as hot as any of these girls out there. But the when I went there once, all you have to do is go to one of the little bars, the outdoor places across the street from, like, Universal Studios, and act like you're a producer.
Oh, sure.
Waitresses all dig you big time.
Sunglasses on, put a scarf on something.
Yeah, you act like you're somebody. Hey, I better be nice to this guy, you know, type of thing. Anyway, it's a weird world. But it is scenic, though. I'll say that for him.
I like it out there.
I went to one of those Universal tours. I really loved it. I thought it was really spectacular. The thing that they would didn't the back lot burn though or something? Had a fire there?
Sounds right. I don't know.
But the back lot, you could see all the different places that you saw on TV. I mean, just even though they're just house fronts and those kinds of things, and there was in the back lot there was a spot where they had a corner where there was fake L tracks, and below it was like a building or a front, and I remember two movies that were filmed right there. The way they spruce it up, all of a sudden it was the scene from I don't know if you remember the scene from The Sting, and the scene from Robert Redford, The Natural. Where he met what's her name in the cafe,
yeah,
for the lemonade,
yeah.
Think back, and when Robert Redford went in and got the soup and met the lady who ended up being the assassin, and he went out the back window. Exact same place, exact same L stop, L thing.
I haven't seen that movie in forever, but that sounds right.
Yeah, exact same spot, and there was a front of a house. You know, there's nothing behind it. It's just 2x4s holding it up. I think there were three or four TV sitcoms that had the same house. It was My Three Sons, Leave It to Beaver, and Donna Reed were all the same house front. And when you think back on it, you know, of course they put bushes and all the other stuff, so it looked different, but it was the same
right.
house front.
That's
but,
great.
But they had a spot where it wasn't very big, yet they had three Western fronts. Now, what do you have to have in every Western town? The three key places:
the bank, the general store, and the saloon.
Yeah, and so they had three right? spots where they so they could film three Westerns at the same time because they had three fronts with the bank, the general store, and the saloon. Scary, huh? I think, and one of them had a jail.
Yeah, the jail. I was going to say that could be an answer. The whorehouse, although that can be combined with the saloon.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Sometimes a church or you know,
church,
a revival hall or something.
Well, then
not always.
That's a big movie when you're doing that. Yeah, when you show the whole street, then you're talking like what was the one with Gary Cooper and Grace Kelly?
High Noon.
Yeah, that when they had the whole street, that was a high budget deal. We had Grace Kelly for sure. So. Before she went off to Monaco. So, John, we've got the market in the crapo. We've got no deal. We've got the coronavirus driving everybody nuts. We had Margaret Brennan beating up on some mayor yesterday. I was listening on the way home from Audrey's and about why won't you issue a mask mandate? And he said, finally, the guy goes, well, I'll tell you one of the reasons. I wore one faithfully, and I still got it, so I don't know if it works or something along those lines. And she's like, wait, you still got to do it. And it's like, wow. Reminded me of bleeding in the Middle Ages. I mean, anyway.
Bring out the leeches.
Yeah, bring out the leeches. And, God, that would be ugly to have one of those things on you, but I suppose they do work.
Yeah, remember the Sargent's Drugstore down on Wabash, which is no longer there, but it had been there, I think, since Lincoln's time. I think Lincoln used to have prescriptions filled there, and they had a jar of leeches sitting up on the counter.
God. Well, Mandy, John and I know a person. I won't even say the sex. They had to have some serious nose surgery. And normally when you talk about people having to use leeches, it's like, you know, somebody has a toe problem or something, or it has to do with diabetes or something. You have to put a leech on your toe, you know, to help the circulation. This person had to have the leeches hanging off their nose. Can you imagine that? Maddie can't even imagine it. He doesn't want to hear it. Because of the circulation, they had to restructure some. Anyway, bleh. So Jan, we clearly have somewhat of a meshing now between at least the market this morning and what's going on in the politics in the country. You know, I don't. And you know, out of the mouth of whoever the poor lady they were interviewing on Friday, out in wherever she was, Will County or one of those counties, saying, "I don't understand why you're shutting us down," and across the street, the place is mobbed over at the Walmart. Why do we think that just because one person shuts one places down versus other places that it's somewhat okay? Either like there's not a general shutdown. Why are these guys being so specific?
No, I don't get it. The idea of a curfew, you know, from 10 to 6 or whatever is enforced in Chicago now makes no sense to me either. I mean, the idea that you can get, you know, coronavirus, you know, more easily at 2 in the morning than you do at 2 in the afternoon, it doesn't strike me as too medically smart or intuitive. I don't get at all what that's about or why those particular hours that we're talking about. It smacks of some kind of knee-jerk response to a problem that is, I think, a lot more subtle and more complex than things like that make it out to be.
What do you think the chances are that it has absolutely nothing to do with the virus? It has to do with general crime rates, and it has to do with...
It's a way of keeping a lid on things. Making it, you know, a crime to be out gathering, you know, at street corners, which was not unusual in Chicago. I mean, there's been a lot of incidents in the last several years associated with events like this, street parties, house parties out of control, people, you know, out 3 in the morning drinking, carousing and stuff. This is a way of getting rid of that, or at least tamping it down.
Well, there was a... It's not like I've ever gone to one of these places, but there's a lot of clubs... And a lot of your episodes, not that there aren't problems in some of the hotels have the high end clubs, right? I mean, I've never been to one of these places. You know, you walk in, if you get a table, what is it, $150 for a bottle of vodka or $200, and then they bring you the fizz or something. But there were places on the north side that were mostly African American, although I guess you could walk in if you wanted to. Big long lines to get in, and a lot of the issues going back on the expressways were people that were in those clubs that were there till, you know, 3-4 in the morning. Well, 2 some nights and 4 on Saturday. One of them was on Goose Island, and one of them was on Halsted Street. And because I remember one night, I actually stayed downtown at like 10 o'clock. I couldn't believe it. So I drove home down Halsted, and I see it can't be 20 degrees out, and I see all these girls waiting in line to get in this place, and short skirts, no coat. So obviously it was unsafe to leave your coat in there, right? So these girls are waiting in line in this freezing temperature. I'm going, whatever you're looking for in there, it can't be that good. I just, whatever. But I mean, I think they've essentially shut all those places down. And I'm sure that is absolutely part of the motivation. I mean, I'm not sure, but I suspect. You know, and I don't know that you necessarily, you know, people are going to do some nasty stuff, but people are also people, and I don't know that we need a mom for a mayor. I mean,
a bad mom
for a mayor. I mean, there's a lot of people who feel that the bar should just never be open anyway. If there's no food there, why should there? I mean, it's been, I don't know that anybody in the last, I don't really answer this. If you just walked in and wanted a regular liquor license without food, I don't know. Have you been able to get one of those in 20 years? For 20 years?
I think they're pretty hard to get.
Yeah, I think they're... I'm going to use the word impossible. You got to at least tell them you're going to serve, you know, frozen pizzas or something. I don't know that the little bars on the south side, middle of the block, where there was a, you know, just a little bar for people to pile out of their front room and get on there and have a beer, watch the game, and go home. I don't know any of those places have been licensed. There's still probably enough you can buy, but I don't know that you can get a new one. Now, does anybody ever said that we're not going to do that anymore? I just think it's evolved that way. You know, it's somebody's idea. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's an evolution that some people seem to have an agenda and others don't. I mean, I know the guys, they just closed because of the COVID thing across from the Tripoli. Shoes. Remember that place, Manny?
Of course, yeah.
Well, before they, an iteration ago, they had trouble with the ownership or something, and they ended up losing the license somehow. And I don't know the full story, but when they came back in, it was one of the Bear backup quarterback's brother or somebody became one of the owners. But they had to scramble around, and they had to buy a food license from somebody that went out of business and move it into the place and have popcorn, you know, Jiffy Pop and frozen pizzas or something in order to get the liquor license. They wouldn't just reissue them the bar license. So it's been around a while, whatever this motivation is. But I have to believe that, you know, Lori and her gang figures that they shouldn't have any of these clubs. Now, a lot of them are a lot of trouble, but also people need to go out. So I don't know what people, you know, people get hurt in softball. It doesn't mean you should stop softball, right?
Right, or any college sport.
Yeah.
Or any high school sport. You know, I was talking to my brother the other day about stuff in general, and he raised something I hadn't never really thought about. But, you know, before Prohibition in this country, there were breweries practically, you know, in every precinct.
Yeah.
In Chicago and any city, really. Then there was a lot of local pride, ethnic pride, in your local brew, and the taverns around the place stocked it. And after Prohibition, after a complete, you know, ban on legal liquor sales, what happened afterwards was all those small places were never ever going to come back.
Right.
And it was regulated in such a way that only the major breweries had a chance at surviving. So you saw a transformation of the liquor industry because of Prohibition. It was never the same after that. It was kind of the same thing after the oil embargo in the 70s, where all the independent oil companies really never came back. And I can see now with the restaurant industry and the food industry generally that if you're an independent restaurant owner or a bar owner, you're swimming uphill trying to make a living at all. I mean, you're being legislated out of existence pretty much, and it's a pattern that you can see in other, you know, appetites over history, and it's very disconcerting.
Well, that's what whenever the right wing types, sorry, John, whenever the right wing types, lash out at the left wing alleged socialists, you know, the AOCs of the world and those kinds of things. My first question, because I don't. As you know, disagree and engage with people, the last thing I want to do is argue. So, what I'd like to do is poke a little bit at what they're saying. You know, I don't know if this is kind of a strategy, but it's a good one or not. And whenever somebody's, you know, on their horse about, you know, these damn liberals and the socialists and the Marxists and why aren't they communists and stuff, the first thing you have to ask, especially if you're in a bunch of people, and somebody has had the floor, male or female, for a while, you say, boy, you know, I don't disagree with you at all, but what do you think our current situation is now? And then, of course, you shut everybody up, and the guy will say, what do you mean? I said, well, the people here who want to go this other route, or you say they want to go this other route, and become Marxist or socialist or whatever that even means. I don't know if anybody here can even define it, but I'll get a shot in there. And then I'll say, how would you define our current system? And they'll say, what do you mean? We're capitalists. I said, are we? What do you mean? Of course we are. Well, name me 10. Are we competitive capitalism? Well, yeah. Name me 10 businesses, 10 industries that are still competitive. in any sense of the word. That shuts everybody up. And when you say I'm not with the socialists, I'm not with the Marxists, but I see what they're seeing, and they're seeing problems, and the problems are there. Look at the Facebook. Look at Amazon. They were able to get there because the state, with the help of the federal, did our Supreme Court get paid off? One of the two biggest decisions in our lifetime were one they made for banks, to where if the bank is out of state, that the usury laws in the individual states don't apply. Right?
Right.
So it means if the usury law in Illinois is 12%, which I think it is, John, or at least used to be, that you can charge somebody 25% on a credit card as long as you're in North Dakota. Well, that sucks, in my opinion. The other is Amazon doesn't have to collect taxes if it comes in from out of state. And that somehow or another, you have to enforce your people to pay them on their own. Well, come on. You know, don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining. That's not going to happen. A, because people won't pay, and B, because the people like Jay and the people before him are not going to force it because they're using Amazon, right? They're not paying taxes in their own state. How about all the new toilets that he bought online? There's a shot.
Below market.
Yeah, below market online. But what I'm saying is that those kinds of decisions have cost people so much money. But so yeah, do I want to go socialism? No. Do I want a single payer medical system? No. But I don't want these people being conglomerates either. So I don't know that we have the talent to take that industry or the industries that are screwing people back to being somewhat competitive. That to me is the answer, but it's obviously that's not even in the cards. We have two decisions right now, it appears. One is to keep going where we're going, with obviously every single misuse of the antitrust ever in the medical community, or we decide to go with a European model. But at least the European model, I've been to Denmark, I've never been to Sweden. It doesn't appear to me, John, that stealing money from your fellow man is as much of a national sport there as it is here. It's like if you can be a drug company and you can figure out a way to get around a law and charge $50 for prescription instead of $5, it's considered a tremendous thing for shareholders. And if you went out with that as your mantra, you give shareholders basically out the behind, right? I don't know why we became all of a sudden that immoral, but we have. And on one hand, and you even have people that are honest people say, well, that's what businessmen are supposed to do. You're supposed to lose your morals when you become a businessman. I never felt that way. You know, but obviously some people do. I don't know why they do. I have no clue, but they do. What are we doing here? I mean, we managed to get, I use it because it's cost so many people. It's cost so many people how much money in advertising since they went generic. It was the Viagra and what was the other one? Two people in the hot tub.
Cialis.
I don't think Levitra ever did much ever. Anyway, they both went off, but they managed to get another 2 years on a 17-year patent. Why? Why'd they get the extra 2 years? I mean, isn't 17 long enough? I mean, it's way longer than anybody would.
Plenty long enough, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more. But you look at what's going on. You look at the electric company. Those guys are monopolists. But they've reached the point now where, I mean, the subtlety of when you have the electric company telling you to use less electricity, they don't care anymore. Because they're charging you. If you didn't use any, they're going to charge you $50 a month.
Of course, they'll still charge you for the meter.
Yeah, they've managed to get ahead of us and stay ahead of us the whole way. So all this fighting we do left and right, and putting buffoons in office at every level, the people who really are making the dough, that once you make it to that size, you're going to be fine. I mean, nothing's going to break the hold that Merrill Lynch and Schwab and I mean every year. Firms that are size, that have brokers that still talk to people and still help people out, are constantly aghast at what the electronic firms continue to force on people, the responsibilities that you have if you talk to somebody, where if you never talk to them, and you do, and you make, you can charge more, and never talk to them, and it's not your fault. Whatever happens to them, they can eviscerate themselves, and it's okay. You know, but anyway, gentlemen, I want to. We had Jim Lawler on a couple weeks ago talking about the mortgages and everything, and they had a dude on Friday, one of the bank people, and he was saying that. I was talking to Jim and a couple other guys from his firm the other night, and they're saying that some of the mortgage 60 days late on mortgages now is up to like 7% nationwide. And this is normally, if it gets over 2%, it's a problem for banks. You know, in general, if it gets over 2%, it's, you know, not a huge problem, but it's something to look at. Now, if that number gets 8, 9, 10, I mean, what are we talking about? And meanwhile, we have people on TV touting bank stocks every day. When does this all come home to roost, Dan? Are we years away, months away, weeks away?
I suspect months. It could be as long as a year or two, depending on what, you know, how tamped down things remain. But it will eventually cause a credit freeze up. I mean, there's no way a bank's going to be able to lend money out pretty much at any interest rate if it doesn't have, you know, reserves anymore. If it's just sitting on a bunch of property that it can't sell, that's taken through foreclosure, which is the last thing a bank wants to do. They'll do, I think, almost anything to prevent that from being the end game. But eventually it will crack down on lending. And, you know, I see the possibility of a housing bubble again, like the one from, you know, 12, 13 years ago, on the horizon. And it's already kind of happening in certain markets. And probably your friend Audrey is better equipped to talk about this than I am right now. Where it's not maybe as uniform as it was 12, 13 years ago, but I can see prices dropping now, and, you know, prices somewhat stable in some other neighborhoods, but I do think it signifies that there is going to be a potentially explosive effect like there was, you know, not so long ago, where prices are just going to drop and you can't move property, and the lending issues will be part of that too. If the banks are really stretched, they're going to tighten credit, and it's going to be harder for good credit risks to get mortgage money. It's going to, you know, put a halt to construction. It's going to put a halt to business expansion. It's going to be, you know, a domino effect like what happened before. And I see the beginnings of it now. Actually, I think. I mean,
well, John, what's the procedure if Matty Weber has a house? And all of a sudden, he bails on his mortgage 1 month. What does the bank do? Anything? Just write him a letter saying,
well,
you're late.
In Illinois, you can, you know, you're a delinquent, and, you know, then there's back interest that you owe, and it just keeps fueling your deficit with the bank. You get the first time around that happens, if you cure the default, meaning if you come, say, within 70 days or whatever, you get cash together to cure the delinquency, you pay everything that is owed and any fees, any money that's been advanced for taxes, whatever, and you're back to where you got an even balance with your bank before things went south, then all is forgiven. You can, you know, you keep going. There's no penalty for doing that. But the second time that happens, it accelerates the loan. And then, you know, they can proceed to foreclosure and, you know, have a sale, and the lender will bid in at the sale. Anybody else could come in and bid, too, if they want. And you can have friends come in and bid, you know, and, you know, get the bank off your back and then do a flip of the property or whatever and take your cash or whatever you can get out of it, and then somebody else comes in, like a third party, and buys the place. So, but otherwise, the bank, you know, is going to ask for all their money up front, and somehow you get it or you lose the property. So,
I know a guy who did that once in California and made out like a bandit on a deal.
Oh yeah, there are possibilities for enrichment and, you know, making money if you're well poised and you got a good piece of property to start with. So,
I mean, to the tune of this is many, many years ago. It was before the 2008. It might have been before the 2000, where the dude bought a place for like 175 in like Monterey or someplace, and they just had this huge collapse. And at the time, I don't know if it is anymore, but in California, a mortgage is not considered a personal debt, which is spectacular, but it wasn't. Yeah, so the thing went to, it went to like an auction, like you say. And I said to the dude, hey, I said, do you have a buddy that's got like, I said, how much is the place worth? And he goes, like 65. I go, 65? You paid 165 for a place 2 years ago that's worth 65? What's the matter with you? Anyway, I didn't say it. I wasn't laughing when I said it, but, and he goes, yeah. And it's like, you know, I said, well, do you have a buddy that's got any dough? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, here's the deal. Tell the guy to bid 75. You pay him $2,000 for an option to buy it at 85 anytime in the next 6 months. And he goes, why would I do that? Because you want to buy it at 85. So the friend buys it. The guy gives him the $2,000, and 4 months later, he buys it from the guy at 85. Rents it out for 2 years and sells it for like two. only in California, right?
Well, it can happen. I think pretty much any place. If you get somebody who knows how to sell the property at the other end of the deal for the highest price and fixes stuff that needs fixing and has a good sense of where to even get involved as far as location and what the trends are. So you got to have savvy people to make money habitually that way, because you can just as easily if you're not careful.
Well, this was an extreme case, and like I said, in California, it wasn't considered a personal, so you have to put it on your credits. But flip it around, John. What if I own the bank? All right, it's chief banking, and Matty Weber's got the mortgage at my place. He doesn't pay the first month. I doubt, but I'm asking the question. I doubt if I have to do anything. Any notification if he's 1 month in arrears. So if he cleans it up 6 weeks from now, I don't think I have to make an entry anywhere, do I? Other than,
No, but 60 days, it's going to go on the borrower's credit. It's going to, it's going to trigger a whole, delinquency procedure in the bank because they now see trouble on the horizon.
But what does it do if I'm writing out my statements that I'm going to give to shareholders or the public? After 60 days, does it show up on my sheets, or does it show up first when I say, wow, I got a bunch of these things, I better, just to be conservative, I better take $1 million increase in my loss reserve. I don't have to identify.
I don't think there's any requirement. I mean, if you didn't have any delinquent loans, you would certainly use that as a marketing tool. Remember old Chesterfield Federal Savings and Loan?
Oh, yeah.
That's where my parents always had their mortgage. And you'd walk in the door of the place, they had a placard before you even got to the tellers, and it had a little digest of their balance sheet. And at the bottom, it said, properties held through foreclosure, zero. But that didn't mean maybe they didn't have a ton of loans that were delinquent.
Right.
And were maybe, pushing, within minutes of going to foreclosure sale. And they, if they were absolutely accurate, they would say so many loans are in default. Here's the amount that is not, these are non-performing loans at the moment. But no bank or savings loan would do that, because it could have been a horrendous number given what the economy was doing at a given time. But you can tweak it in a way where you don't have to show those as, they're technically delinquent, but they're not. You don't own the property yet. You haven't purchased it at a sale, so it hasn't become a dire issue yet. Maybe, but it's heading in that direction.
So, but if I'm a shareholder, when do I know about it? The first time they increased the loan reserve?
Yeah, I think so. And by then, I think there's been a filing of a foreclosure. The thing is now in litigation, because there's no other way to get performance on the thing.
But I never find out that it's specifically Matty Weber's house we're talking about.
No.
Until it's listed, whatever, as an auction or something.
Right. And it would be advertised, in the legal notices and the paper of, such a circulation number. And it's a matter of record, technically. Unless you read those things all the time, like the sports section, you're not going to know very much about it. But it is a matter of record, so.
So it's not like the Irish personals?
No.
You know what those are, Matty? Those are the obits.
That's right.
Social networking for the dead.
Yeah. Or for the widows, anyway.
Right.
God. Anyway, I'm sure people have thought of it that way. Wow, she was always hot. I don't know why she married that guy. Now he's gone. Maybe she'll show up at the wake. Anyway, people are strange. Did you ever go to a wake at what's the place in Bridgeport? God, it's been
McInerney's.
Yeah.
I think once I was there, many years ago. I think it's still there. I'm pretty sure.
Oh yeah, I went to wake there maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I was like, it was weird because Matty, it's this old Irish funeral home. It's right down the block from the church that was really involved in the unionization of the stockyards, where they were giving sanctuary to some of the union people, so the company goons couldn't kill them and stuff. I mean, it was a tough spot, and they were down the block. And Royko wrote an article about the place and how everybody went to the same place. And first thing you did is you went to the same butcher store, and you got 30 pounds of ham and stuff and turkey and sandwiches for people to come over that went to the wake. And it was, Royko wrote the hoorah. I mean, it was, I'm walking the place, and it's the same era that's been there for 100 years. And I kept thinking, my dad died in 56 and he was Irish. I kept thinking how many times that he was in there for a wake, because it was like the only place anywhere around there, right? And weird, just a weird feeling, but it felt so like I was going back in the ages. But anyway, but the thing about the church down the block giving people a sanctuary and stuff, I mean, it was pretty eerie, John. I mean, you wouldn't think that all that stuff happened right here. But
is that St. Gabriel's? Is that the church? Was that the one?
East of
Lowell, 45th and Lowell or whatever?
East of Halsted, right about 45th, yeah.
Yeah.
And a big place. And anyway, so yeah, Jan, I'm starting to sense that we're somewhat coming together. I don't think these guys are going to have a plan here by next week. I mean, they would have had it by now, unless the minute what's her name gets approved, they're going to just turn all their eyes on it. But I don't think McConnell thinks it's a positive. And it seems like the people who are negotiating aren't the people that are going to do the vote. Why do you think that they keep saying they're working, but nothing happens?
Yeah, the way that the stimulus has unfolded from the get-go, but certainly since the first stimulus runaround, I'm perplexed. I don't know what either side hopes to gain from this kind of handling of it. I don't know how it translates to anybody downstream as being, what you've got representative government there to do. This doesn't seem like it. There's no urgency. I mean, they keep saying how urgent it is, we have to do it. There's no evidence that anybody treats this as an urgent issue. And the markets are the only way of really gauging, the kind of level of panic up or down from day to day. Whatever nervousness there is, you see it in those numbers. But I find it kind of crazy that there isn't some kind of way of bridging whatever gaps there are at a time like this. And, the election has contaminated everything, when it comes to bipartisanship of any sort, which, has always, it's put the skids on bipartisanship close to an election, definitely, because you're angling for the best deal afterwards. But the stakes now are pretty high, and there's a crisis of confidence in the people that goes along with this that's far more devastating and more costly in the long run. And I see great damage being done to people's confidence.
Well, John, I really do, without having a clue as to which side I have my opinion, but I really don't know how the history is going to be written. We'll see if Matty agrees with me on this. The first time through, in March and April, it appeared to me that this thing landed, people are dying all over the place. We didn't know what we were going to end up doing. We had naval ships. We had McCormick Place. It wasn't that long ago that everybody, including me, was pretty darn afraid about this, this COVID. And an awful lot of people didn't do well. A lot of people got really sick. A lot of people died. I mean, everybody knows that, okay? At least everybody should. And now all of a sudden, I'll use the term lucked out, doesn't appear to be universally infectious. Some people, for whatever reason, don't get it, which takes those huge numbers that people had in the beginning that made everybody afraid, including me, takes them down quite a bit. Doesn't mean there's no disease. Absolutely does not mean that. And we seem to have gotten better at treating it. And, oh, by the way, it seems to have gotten a little bit less virulent. I won't say to some poor guy's grandmother who just died from it, I'm not going to tell him that and say, oh, by the way, it's less virulent. You know, she lasted two extra days. That doesn't help anybody. The fact is, the numbers are not the same as they were. I mean, in Britain, in April, they had 22,000 people die. Now they've got 2,000, which if your parents or your grandparents or you are one of the 2,000, it doesn't help, but it's a lot less than 22. So we've got sort of that going for us. So now we have all kinds of different things in the States. The bad news is it seems to be even more infectious. It's all over the place. It's everywhere. It's in the rural places. It's in every city. And if it's not there yet, it's going to be there pretty soon, it appears to me. And is that a fair summation of where we are?
Yeah, yeah.
And now we have people in Congress that back then people said, look, we just got to – everybody's out of work. We just lost 9 million people, for God's sake. We got to, A, up the unemployment rolls, and we got to keep these businesses going. And so they did that pretty damn fast, really, for the first time. You know, I can never really remember anybody – at the lower end of the chain actually getting a check. Usually the trickle-down theory works, you know, doesn't work, but it's very popular, right? So, okay, they do all that. Well, now here it is months later, and there's a big difference in how to handle it with the different states. And some states are going bonkers and are going, I won't say bonkers, going one side and saying, we're closing everybody again, forcing people home and making everybody get laid off. By the way, you need to cover us again. Where other places are saying, look, we know that's not working. We're just going to let everybody go to work. We're going to let everybody go back to school. We know a lot of people are going to get it. We're going to treat the ones that do, and we're going to try and keep it away from other people. We don't have the same, you know, we don't have the same feelings about it that maybe some other place does. So it's one thing for a Jay Pritzker to do what he's doing and say, okay, I'm going to go do all this and I'm going to cause all this economic hardship. I'm not saying right or wrong. He's causing serious economic hardship to a lot of people and a lot of businesses. Then to turn around and say it's somebody else's job to totally cover for what he just did, some of the Republican people are saying, you're making that, in our opinion, somewhat dumb decision. We're not covering you. It seems to me that there's a lot more pushback on that this time. It's not as universal as it was in March and April that something needs to be done for everybody because this thing's a real problem. I mean, it is a problem still. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, the people that want to go totally off the end and say schools still can't open, universities can't open. By the way, you need to cover us until hell freezes over. Other people are saying, hey, other states are doing it differently. They're not asking for anywhere near as much money. And why should we pay you differently? Whatever you feel you do, we have to come up with it. So there is way more of a debate, a legitimate debate this time, John. I mean, what side's right or wrong, I don't know. But there is more of a debate. Is that fair?
Oh, and it's along severely drawn party lines, too. Where the red states have I think stuck their necks out and tried to be somewhat experimental in not having general shutdowns, and the blue states have gone in the opposite direction and really spoon fed everybody with a doom and gloom scenario, and you can see that they both have some stakes in whatever the outcome is, but I get the sense that the blue states are using it as a bargaining chip for a massive bailout. That is, going to be made even bigger by their choice to do what they've done. I mean, I just don't think that the science really that they've used here backs up what they're doing at the other end. And another thing too, Tom, I mean, we're in the middle of, we're not the middle yet, but close to approaching the middle of a flu season. And do you hear any data about flu cases at all? I mean, I hear about flu shots. I don't hear about, hospitalizations because of flu as if it's not, It's not being carved out of, these illness statistics any differently from other diseases, apparently. But we've got COVID up the wazoo. And I get the feeling that everything has been rolled into a COVID category, even if it's flu-like, and even if it, maybe there's antibodies present or if there's a positive test result for COVID, but are we really dealing with something that is flu? And you can't tell that's not the case from looking at the statistics, because everything I've read in other countries, and you know, south of the equator, the flu season, you know, they showed a 98% drop in reported flu cases. Well, obviously they weren't looking for flu; they were looking for something else. But maybe it's flu.
I think the test
anyway,
is.
So.
I believe, and please, if somebody knows different, I believe the test that they give are giving people, it's very COVID specific. This particular one, that's what they're
right. And, but my concern is that masking illnesses that are flu or flu-like, that COVID spots, you know, with the testing. But if there's a huge drop in other reported flu cases, then that would tell me that COVID is maybe a variety of flu, when they've got the ability to test for specifically, but it isn't that different.
I don't think it
shouldn't be the numbers for flu.
This is just
shouldn't be collapsing.
This is just from the stuff I read, being no doctor. But I don't think that any other type of flu is a COVID. A couple of types of colds are. So if there's any confusion in the test, that it would be with another couple of types of colds. I don't think any flu virus is similar to the COVID.
That could very well be, but I think if they're only looking for COVID, attempting to segregate or to differentiate, then I think we've got some flawed statistics.
Well,
every flu case is being, you know, somehow in a COVID category, because there aren't any flu cases outside of the COVID numbers.
But if you have the flu, you're symptomatic. You know you got it.
Right.
Here, this is the day we reported 6,000 positive cases in Illinois. They gave over 83,000 tests. So 77,000 people went and got a test that didn't have it. This thing is mind-boggling to me. And we're actually using that number. So the next day, if 4,000 people have it, but only 50,000 people showed up that don't have it, somehow that's worse. These numbers are, if you have any kind of a math background past fourth grade, you wonder, what are they doing?
Well, it factor in, you know, false positives or false negatives too, or you know, conflicting results. You get tested one place day one, you get tested someplace else day two or day three, and you have different results, you know, for those dates. There's a lot of those anecdotal, you know, bits of evidence too. So, again, they're just snapshots. You know, if none of these people really had serious illnesses that required hospitalization, why do we care? What's the point? That number. What are we doing with that number, other than terrorizing people and putting their economic lives in jeopardy? Over what?
Some people are making money on that. I had to get one, and I have to get another one pretty soon, a COVID test. But the one I got was, they swabbed the back of your throat, and that thing's supposed to be very, very accurate. I don't think anywhere near as many false positives you do with the nose test. Plus, it's nowhere near. The people I know that have gotten the nose test didn't like that one at all. They stick it back into your brain damn near. The throat test was fine. It's a throat swab. It was no big deal, and I think that one's pretty accurate from what I hear. And they turn it around pretty quick. But the fact is, I mean, if we're not going to get, I don't understand how we managed to get this tax thing on the thing. We can't do anything about the pensions. I mean, I'd be very remiss, even if I was a Democratic senator from Indiana, as to why I should give Illinois money. I mean, they're pissing it away to the people. This whole thing with the pensions. Jack, explain to me. I'm sure you've read the clause in the Constitution regarding the pensions. Nobody's pension can, quote, be diminished, right?
Right.
I don't see how that applies. Well, I understand what it says. I don't see how that applies to a pension. I will use the term ill-gotten. In other words, if Mandy Weber retired in 2012, say, and the highest paid person in the school board, the school district where he was in 2012 was $100,000, and so 85% of that, whatever the formula is 85 G's that somebody's making as a as pension. I would have to say that anybody who's making over that somehow game the system. How do I not at least be able to go through and say, hey, look, here's the top number. I'm not going to go bitch about anybody who was there because that was the formula at the time. But if you're making like 200 or something ridiculous because you took 4 years of sick leave and everything else all in your last year, or if somehow you have two pensions or something, that you're going back to 85. And if you complain too much, I'm going to send you a bill for the years I already sent you. I mean, how do you not be able to do that and say, sue me?
Well, I would love to see an attempt made to do that, because the abuses from double dipping and people who retire who aren't retired anymore, they're working again, but they're collecting a retiree's pension. That kind of, you know, abuse of the system drives up, you know, the expenses to the taxpayer astronomically, and it hurts other people who are just trying to get by on a pension. And that they did retire; they're not trying to go back and milk the state for yet another pension and a salary. This kind of freedom to do that, and you know, there's absolutely no peer pressure against it. I think, you know, it's been encouraged.
It's encouraged. It's encouraged.
A gravy train. So,
I mean, if you work for the county for 20 years, and turn around and work for the state for 20 years, you get two pensions, everything's go, girl. They think it's great.
And I mean, if you're an administrator, say in the university system, I think you're vested after 5 years. So a lot of these people, you know, they move from state to state, from fund to fund, and by the time they retire, they're gazillionaires. But if you're a teacher, I mean, you got to be in there 20 years minimum to be vested.
I get it.
So the big earners are given a break on the number of years of service you have to show, and of course they're the ones most likely to double dip, I think. So it's gamed in a way. I don't know how that ever evolved, where, you know, I guess it was to make these things portable and to encourage people in administrative jobs to move around and have a talent pool that everybody could draw on. But what it's done is just bankrupt the pension system, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah, and I don't see how my little dog Scruff was still with us. I used to talk to everybody, you know, go for a dog walk, go back 2 hours later. This happens to Maddie and Venkman. Well, Venkman's not as he's not as conversational maybe as Scruff was, but. And one of the guys said he worked for Wisconsin for like, he was a financial analyst for Wisconsin or whatever he did there. Remember when I got to college, and the guy's older than me. And he said, and he hadn't collected his pension from there, but he just got vested after 5 years. And the thing continued, instead of like paying you off, the thing continued to grow and they still contributed to it. Even though he hadn't been there, he said when he finally collected it, which he has to have done by now, I haven't seen the guy in years. He said he was going to be making more in his pension than he ever made there as a salary, and that was 45 years ago.
And that was never the idea behind any pension.
Yeah.
It was not about enriching you beyond your wildest dreams. It was about giving you a living income for your years of service when you were no longer working. So, you know, how far we've gotten from that.
Well, our buddy Tom Shannon used to come on a show. He's in Florida. It was the guys who had the boats, they weren't rich guys who'd like join the army when they're 18 and they're out of there when they're 38. They immediately become a cop and they retire from the police force at 58. So now they got the pension from the army, they got the pension from the police, and then they run a securities firm somewhere else with the two pensions coming in. they're the guys with the nice house and the yacht. Whatever. I'm not giving anybody grief for who's been in the army for 20 years, but we know people that were in the army, retired, again, went back as a consultant for their. I mean, come on, the pension's before you're 65. If there's nothing wrong with you, you know, I don't know about that. But anyway, John, thank you very much. SP Futures down 33. Nasdaq Futures down 103. Come back. We'll talk to Mr. Mike Hart and look at the volatility. We'll take this market apart next half hour.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures down 33, NASDAQ futures down 102. It's the lowest I've seen us in the S&P. Dow's down 303, although it was a little... A little more than that earlier. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 22. Let's call that flat. Shanghai down 26. It's 0.8%. Hang Seng down, up 132.5%. Europe, though, whack on the DAX. DAX is now down 344. That's 2.7%. That's way more than we had it earlier. FTSE down 24. That's 0.4%. They were, unchanged an hour ago. CAC down 52. That's over 1%. They also are sinking. Evidently, it's... SAP is down 19%, so that's kind of weighing on the market. It's a big move in there. It's weighing on the market big time. Bonds, 10-year 0.80, down 3 basis points. It's a pretty big move. One down minus 0.57. That's unchanged, actually. Japan unchanged at positive 0.03. Oil, down 98 cents now, 38.87, so no more 41 like it was early last week. We also have Brent down 93 cents. 4084, natural gas up 7 cents. 304, they must have been watching that Denver game, Eddie, the natural gas traders. RBOB down a penny at 112. Gold down a dime now, 1905. Silver down pretty heavy, down 41 cents. 2462. Copper down 2 cents to 311. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier crash on the outbound Ryan is all clear. Same for that earlier crash on the inbound Eisenhower. So those expressways are actually moving pretty well right now on a Monday morning. No issues on I-57 or the Bishop Ford either. Stevenson's been quiet all morning. Traffic building steadily on the inbound Kennedy, but no accidents or delays to report of significance. Edens has looked good all morning, too. Off the expressways, there's a fuel spill accident at Harlem and 30th Street that has crews on the scene. This happened about 15 minutes ago. So we'll keep you posted as that develops, but that's the big thing going on this morning in the area. Everything else is all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds and some drizzle early, and then we should dry out by later this morning. And it'll be cold and dry all day. Lots of clouds and a high of just 41 degrees. Right now it's overcast and 37 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, it's cold out there too. Partly cloudy skies, high winds, and a high of just 68 today with wind gusts up to 40 miles per hour. Right now it's clear and 67, and we're going to stay right there with a high of just 68. In sports, Monday Night Football tonight, it'll be the 5-1 Bears versus the 4-2 Rams from Los Angeles. It's a 7:15 p.m. Chicago time kickoff as the Bears look to remain in first place at the NFC North with a win. But it won't be easy against the Rams, who are very good as well. Sunday Night Football last night, the Cardinals are making noise. They gave the Seahawks their first loss of the season, winning 37-34 in overtime. Arizona is now 5-2. Seahawks dropped to 5-1. And the World Series, Pivotal Game 5, went to the Dodgers last night. They doubled up Tampa 4-2, and they now lead the best of 7, 3-2, with Game 6 tomorrow night. Chief.
Two questions. Should the... Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic. How's it going this morning, Chief?
All right. I thought you were going to be say something nice to Mike about his Browns.
He's a Bills fan, for God's sake.
Well, that's right. Who's the Browns fan?
No one in the world.
I thought... Oh, you know who's a Browns fan? I thought somebody was we had on here. What was that?
Nobody I know.
Oh, God. All right. This is a Bills fan. What'd they do?
They
did fantastic.
Yeah, they won. After, they lost two in a row, right? And then they beat the Jets yesterday.
Everybody beats the Jets.
That's right. You gotta beat who's on the schedule. They get to play the Jets twice. Lucky them.
What the, so what is going to happen with... Why don't the Cowboys just say enough for the year?
They really should. Good Lord. I wouldn't be surprised if some of their guys start opting out for COVID fears. Although they don't get paid, so that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, they're so the guy takes a cheap shot at their quarterback. Now he's out. So are you suiting up or what?
I mean, I certainly have eligibility at the college level still to play football. I wasn't quite good enough to play the pro level, but if they wanted me to go in and run some read option, I could do that.
God. So if what would be your advice if I... So you had a softball game on the lakefront tonight here in Chicago. What's the weather going to be?
It's going to be cold. We play tonight at 9 o'clock. I imagine it's going to be very, very frigid.
I think you'd rather be playing at 6.
Yeah, and next week we play at 7. Next week it's actually the early forecast. It shows like 55 and sunny next week, so that'll be nice. But tonight's going to be tough.
Okay, so Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. I'm listening to your market review this morning. It sounds like... things are moving around the world, at least this morning they are.
They used to say on the trading floor, this bleep is moving.
Yes, it is.
Are we starting to get, I mentioned earlier, just lobbed it out there, are we finally starting to get some connection between the market, Washington, and maybe the world here all of a sudden, especially over in Europe? What happened with this SAP this morning? Down 19%, whack, whack, huh? A big
yeah, that's exactly. That's an interesting observation. Maybe things are starting to, maybe some of the correlations that we expect to see. When I say correlations, things when thing moves, usually you have other products that move with it. So if the market's moving higher, typically you might see bonds moving lower. They're inversely correlated, but a lot of the underlyings in the market are also moving higher, highly correlated. So some of those correlations that we're seeing seem to be coming back in line a little bit. So maybe things are starting to line up with the types of risk that we see really on the horizon, especially, we got the election coming up. That, to me, is the biggest uncertainty that we're going to... I wouldn't be surprised if we see this type of volatility going all the way up into the election, and then who knows what the election is going to actually do to this market once it comes out. What we can expect to see is at some point volatility is going to get taken out of the market a little bit. That's assuming we find that you know, the election goes as planned and someone actually gets elected.
How much of a, when you say the election, because I don't know the answer to this, I'm starting to think maybe it's not just the president. How much of the election is the Oval Office versus the Senate?
That's a good question. I, you know, I think right now, not when we're talking about market risk, I don't think much of it is so much that. That's just my opinion. I think so much of it is who the candidate's actually going to be. And even though there seems to be a huge bias to one side, I think there still is enough uncertainty out there around who actually is going to get elected that I think that's where the major risk is getting placed right now. And sort of the microcosm of the rest of Washington, I think it is, of course, all the risks hypothetically are placed in the market and in volatility, but I think that's a much smaller piece of the puzzle.
Well, there's to me, there's three legs to this stool, and I can't, well, I'm asking the question. I have no idea which leg is the one that's most vulnerable right now. One is obviously the White House. Two is, to me, the Senate, because if Trump gets back in, which I don't really think is a non-possibility, to be honest with you, I think if he gets back in and loses the Senate, I think he's, a lot of the stuff that he has, quote, accomplished in a lot of the conservative eyes and the judges and all that stuff, that all goes away. I don't know what happens if three more judges die and he lobs up conservatives and they don't go anywhere. Anyway, that's somewhat of a gridlock scenario. If Biden gets in and the Republicans hold the Senate, we're kind of back into the gridlock scenario. So we've got those two stools, the White House and the Senate. The third stool is, even though every old fart in the world always gives you the story about how we should, we love gridlock in the market, I don't think the current gridlock is at all healthy. And, I think that right now, if we just let things alone and don't use our heads, I think we got a problem worldwide. I mean, I think we need some leadership here, and the idea of doing nothing for 4 years is almost as bad as a decision.
Well, and, you know, I think part of you're covering some of the big risks. I think all of those risks are being placed in the market, but it's a durational risk, right? So, who wins is the nearest to expiration right now in my eyes. Who wins the election is going to be in the next 8 or 9 days, and that's where the market is placing short-term risk. The other risks that you're talking about are going to, I think, be in the market for a while because they just take longer to play out, and the effects are more uncertain, and it's not as much of a binary event as it is, well, let's see how things unfold. So, you know, do we see a volatility market after this election where volatility goes back to where we were 2017, 18, and 19? We're trading at, call it like a VIX around an average of 10 to 12. Right now we're trading 29. And really this whole year we've been above 20 anyways. You know, does volatility, because of all those risks that you just mentioned, do we stay above 20 for the next 2 years, 3 years, as we wait to see all these pretty unusual uncertainties kind of play themselves out? I kind of lean towards the latter, that these are longer-term uncertainties that are going to be in the market, and I think for the next couple of years anyways, at a minimum, we're going to see a lot more volatility than we've seen in the past. What that means to me, and the way traditionally volatility might be viewed as a risk that you want to stay away from, that's really not how I'm using the term. I view volatility as opportunity. So the idea of higher volatility in the market really does translate to more opportunity for traders in the market, because as traders, we want a certain amount of uncertainty that gives us the back and forth action, that gives us moves that kind of fit our assumptions, as opposed to sideways movement or just movement to the upside like we've seen, you know, the past 3 or 4 years.
Well, I don't disagree. I just, The question I'm fishing around to ask you, because you're supposed to be the maven and all this stuff. You're supposed to be our maven here. Not, you know, you're not asking questions, you're answering them, but, I guess I agree with you that, let's say, for instance, Biden wins and the Republicans hold on to the Senate by one seat. All right, so I'd say that's probably a, out of all the outcomes, that's probably right now, if you believe the polls, which I don't, let's say that's, I'll use the term likely. I won't say what. That's the chalk right now, right? I'll use the racetrack term.
But the thing with the way I see the Senate playing out is, you know, let's say Trump loses the Senate, and there's this expectation that there's going to be a certain amount of gridlock. My point with the durational thing is that's just going to be a risk that gets placed into the market, that there's now an expectation of certain things not getting passed and certain expectations around things that would affect the market. Now you have a lot more uncertainty about whether those things get pushed through. So I think all it does is it adds a greater amount of uncertainty to the market. So it, in turn, equals more volatility over the next, next 2 years anyways. We'll see just higher uncertainty in the volatility market. You know, how it actually plays out, I think, you know, you can say with a higher probability that there's going to be less accomplished, but you can't say that with 100% certainty.
Well, I'm sort of bought into, again, this is one man's opinion, I bought into the whatever happens in the election, if there's not like a civil war to get somebody out of the White House, I gotta believe, Southside term, that the volatility on the 6th of November, the 13th of November, those weeks, the implied volatility, some of the huge, well, the pretty high numbers there are gonna come in. But if you look out, I did a few positions the other day where we bought some December 31st and sold some November 6th because we were starting to get a little bit of a lower volatility in December. But it really doesn't go down any going out to February, January, March. Not in order. I don't really see anything happening in the election that causes the March volatility to drop. To me, again, this is one man's opinion. To me, March, people are afraid of what's going on. How many more bankruptcies? How many banks? You have talking heads saying these banks are a tremendous buy, that this is the greatest, you know, quickest recovery ever. And one of my guys tells me Friday night that we've now got countrywide 77% over 60-day mortgages not being paid, and that normally when that number gets above 2 or 2.5%, people get their underwear tied in a knot. Now it's 7 and nobody's caring. I mean, are these volatility numbers going out an indication of really how bad the undercurrent of the economy is starting to get? I mean, I hope not, but that's kind of what I'm sort of surmising here.
Yeah, well, I really don't think you're too far off there with those types of risk being in place and being, having a certain amount of risk associated with them. I don't see as much risk there yet. I would expect to see even higher volatility around these. So there is, to me, some complacency about just how big these risks could be. What does that mean? In my eyes, they're placing risk around this, but it's not an extreme amount of risk yet. Could it get much worse? I think there's so many uncertainties around how this whole thing's going to play out that I'm not surprised that we're hanging out at a high level. And I wouldn't be surprised once we get into March that the next 5 months after that, we see higher implied volatility. It's just not getting placed in there yet.
When you listen on the weekend, and again, as you know, for whatever reason, Mike, I never left everyman status. I probably should have, right? But I never did. I'm still a Southside guy, and I always think of the people that I know that are trying to make their mortgages that have been laid off and doing this stuff, and everybody's fighting like hell to keep things going, right? And now, this in the last 4 days here in Chicago, the mayor has come out and said, okay, we're going to raise property taxes, we're going to raise the gas tax, and oh, by the way, anybody who's over 6 miles an hour and a red light camera is going to get a speeding ticket just because we need the revenue, not because we're that worried about it being unsafe. So let's get this straight. A guy who's here, his wife has been laid off, or they got the kids at home, they're doing something. Now, they're just making their mortgage. They need an increase in their taxes, and they need a $150 ticket for going 41 and a 35, about like people would need a bee sting in the behind, right? I mean, this to me, this is all coming out of the same pot. And our politicians at virtually every level appear to me absolutely clueless on this whole thing. And I don't see how, I mean, wherever you're pushing the money around, I don't mean, Jen Flanagan was just talking about the housing bubble, because, you know, if you buy a house now, and I'm not saying people shouldn't, obviously, you know, Audrey has a lot of people who are doing well, she's been real busy. She's busy because she does a good job, but, I mean, I don't even want to get into the conversation of saying, what if it's 5 years from now, and the mortgage rates are 5 and the taxes are double, who the hell are they going to sell it to?
Right. Well, and I think there might be just a major disconnect going on between what the actual the magnitude of this problem and the traditional ways of solving smaller issues like budget deficits and things like that. I mean, they're approaching this, it seems to me, with a microcosm, and they're not looking at the larger picture that this is an entire shift in the way the economy is going to be run for the foreseeable future. You know, entire industries are getting completely wiped out. There's no way, you know, a red light ticket's going to do anything except maybe piss people off. But it's not. There is no way without major changes that we see any sort of normalcy in this market again until major changes are made on the highest level. And just throwing money at the problem, it's a band-aid, it's a short-term solution, it's a necessary short-term solution because this came on so fast, but in order to solve this, we need long-term solutions that are going to solve the problem from the level that the economy is actually changing, which I don't know in history when we saw this last, if we can even make a comparison in history.
Well, I don't think you can, but I think that actually, you know, in some ways I think you can, and when I say that, I look at this is an economic, I'll use the term war, I don't usually do that. This is an economic war, and yet the people we're sending to fight it are not only a bunch of peacetime politicians, but a bunch of politicians that shouldn't be there in the first place. I mean, we would never have done what we did in World War II in 3.5 years if George Marshall didn't get the marching orders from Roosevelt in 37 to clean up the officer ranks and get people in there that shouldn't be there out of there, make them retire and all those things. So even though we didn't have enough planes and tanks and other stuff when we started, we had a pretty clean chain of command, and we had the leadership that was in place.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have to spend 3 years screwing around with that before we actually did anything, right? We were actually pretty much reasonably ready to start on the. But right now, I mean, the people that we have in office in a lot of areas are somewhat, I use the term almost, joke candidates, right? I mean, they're not.
Right. I haven't heard that comparison before. That's an interesting sort of analogy.
Maybe, but why you would ever expect the people we have in there, just because of their background, all of a sudden to be able to handle something like this? I mean, this is a real serious issue for some real serious people, male, female, black, white, Asian, whatever it is. We need our top 30 people working on this, and we're not close to that, I don't think.
Right.
I mean, somehow or another, we have to deal with a state that is already broke, even after good times, and now they're hopelessly broke, and somehow still have the mentality that they can just tax their way out of it because that's all they've ever done. You know, it's you know, it's like bleeders in the Middle Ages. Hey, do you think maybe a penicillin shot would do better? Oh, no, let's just bleed them again. That's what we do. Maybe we'll try the penicillin shot. Come on. I mean, what do we use some kind of more? I mean, we're doing the same thing. Find a way to get more money out of these people because I know they have it. Well, what job have you ever had? Well, I've always just worked for the city. So you don't know if they have it or don't. Well, no, I don't. By the way, we're closing restaurants. Do you know how a restaurant works? Explain to me the balance sheet. Explain to me the margin a restaurant has. I have no idea. So what are you doing closing them? I mean, what are you doing? I mean, we're at that level. For years now, we've been talking. You've been on for years before. Somehow there's been this big disconnect. It looks like, to me, we're starting to connect.
Well, I think it'll be a forced connection at a certain point, but I think you've laid it out perfectly. There's a huge disconnect between the problem and the way that we fix the problem. And I think every traditional means that we've used for smaller problems in the past have almost no impact on the type of situation that we're facing right now. And the thing is, the way it's shaping up to be is this problem doesn't go away on its own, and we can't just buy time until it disappears. And you're right, we need real leadership in there that sees the problem as a functional shift in the entire system, and we need new structure to fit the new way of business. And just it literally throwing band-aids on top of band-aids on top of band-aids, we know, for any type of problem, is not a long-term solution.
Well, I think the when you look at, we've got to look at things differently, we do, but sometimes you can go back, going back to a more competitive situation where people didn't make these decisions that really, really benefited one business versus another. I think to go back in that regard, to go back to a situation where people who are sitting at home getting paid pensions don't make a lot more than people that are trying to pay them. I mean, that was never something that was going to work even in good times. And now in bad times, it really isn't. Right?
Right. Well, you know, and I think it's one of those things where, you know, certain factions, you may be pushing for one industry or another, but I think at a certain point, the laws of economics will take over here. And, you know, and supply and demand will get back in line. And I think, you know, the industries that make it ultimately are going to be the ones that figure out how to create a revenue stream. And the ones that fail are going to fail because no matter how much money we throw at trying to keep them around, you know, economics ultimately are going to play out, and they're going to go the way of the dinosaur. They're just going to disappear.
So let's just hope that the new definition of economics isn't getting your nose further and further up the government's ass.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick question. One word answer. If there's no deal this week, do we get on every day?
Yes.
Yeah. On that note, S&P futures down 35, NASDAQ futures down 103. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.